You're listening to the Full Contact Fighter Radio Network.
Hey guys, this is Dennis Kang. Hey,
this is Mr. Cripples, a.k.a. the Cat Smasher.
Hey, this is John the Natural Alessio.
Hey, this is Rashad Evans.
Hey guys, this is the Big Frog, Jeff Curran.
Hey, this is Mac Danzig.
Hey guys, this is Jason the Anthony McDonald.
Hi, this is Ivan Salvey.
Hey everybody, this is Joe Peltier, Jay Dirksen.
Hey, it's Mark Machine Hunting here.
Hey everybody, you are listening to the world's most handsome fighter on the planet. Yes, this is El Guapo, and you are listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mowat.
Live from the Northwest. Well, I guess it's not really live, but well, I'm recording it. I suppose it is. It's Full Contact Fighter Radio. Brennan, how are you doing?
I'm amazed at your semantical abilities.
Yes, it's quite cunning and I'm a brilliant radio personality, obviously. Podcast personality. I suppose even the calling the show Full Contact Fighter Radio isn't technically correct, but.
Some people like to split hairs about this. Some yes. people who do podcasts like to split hairs about these things, but, you know.
Well, man, we've got a good show today. We've got Jason McDonald coming on the program. He just got back from Florida today, and I know he's been really busy. He's a family man, and he's probably had a ton of media calling, and the first Albertan to fight in the UFC and come out with a victory against Ed Herman, so we're really grateful that he could join us for the show. And then we've also got the Big Frog, Jeff Curran, coming on the program. He's going to be talking to us. He's fighting Wagner Fabiano in the Apex main event, which is taking place in Gatineau, Quebec, this Saturday night. A couple black belt, 145-pound fighters. That should be a good fight as well. So we'll have Jeff Curran on the show, too.
Fantastic. And we got lots of stuff to talk about.
Yeah,
lots
definitely.
Of fightings going on.
Yeah, we're going to have to make our picks for this Saturday's card, and we're going to have to review the Ultimate Fight Night from Tuesday. We'll do that quickly as well. So stay tuned. You're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
The International Fight League returns to Portland's Memorial Coliseum Thursday, November 2nd for the World Team Championship Semifinals. Hometown hero Matt Lindland leads his team, the Wolfpack, into battle against Boss Rutan's Anaconda. And Pat Miletich pits his team, the Silverbacks, against Carlos Newton's Dragon.
Plus, two super fights you don't want to miss.
Have you subscribed to Full Contact Fighter? FCF is the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world, and no avid MMA fan should ever miss an issue. For years now, FCF has been providing MMA enthusiasts in-depth coverage of the world's greatest sport. Each issue contains event reports and photos from across the globe, including coverage from Japan, Brazil, Britain, Canada, and the United States. From fighter bios, technical advice, to training tips, FCF is the only publication that brings you all the MMA coverage you need every month, 12 times a year. Check out www.fcfighter.com for subscription information or call 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world. Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio. Joining us now is the athlete Jason McDonald, freshly returned from Florida. Jason, how are you doing today?
Hey guys, I'm doing fantastic, fantastic.
Yeah. Well, congratulations.
Hey, anytime you can go to the UFC and come in with a bang, then you got to be happy about that.
Absolutely, Jason. Of course, taking out Ed Herman, triangle choke first round, and Ultimate Fight Night on Tuesday. Jason, my first question for you. We'll get into the Herman strategy and the fight and how it unfolded. But, I mean, what's it like? What has it been like for you getting back home? Have you just had a ton of phone calls from media and friends and relatives wishing you congrats?
Well, I'll tell you what, it's actually a bit overwhelming. It's, just like you said, the phone's been ringing nonstop with media, friends, family, friends that I haven't seen in years and years that, you know, happen to be watching the Spike TV show and seeing me fighting on there, and you know, it's been fantastic. Like I say, a bit overwhelming, but I welcome it for sure.
Yeah.
So now that that's out of the way, what's next for you from the UFC? Has there been any word?
I think the UFC is a little bit busy because they have that other show this weekend in Vegas. So right. After the fights are over, there was no meeting or no press conference or anything like that. Everybody kind of just went their own way, and the next morning they picked us up and took us to the airport. So I haven't heard anything as of yet what's next, but my contract, automatically renewed for three fights, so I expect that I'll
I'll have at least three more fights in the UFC here coming up in the next year.
Well, we'll get into who you might like to fight here in the future, but let's just get back to Tuesday night, Jason. You know, I guess you're kind of fortunate in the sense that a lot of guys might not want to fight a talent like Ed Herman in their first fight, their first appearance. But, you know, you look at on the flip side, you get to get a win over an up-and-coming star or someone that the UFC was trying to build as an up-and-coming star. You get on, on the television portion of the card. You're not on the untelevised, the dark fights. So that's a bonus. And right away, everybody gets to see a fight. You looked, really happy afterwards. What was it like for you, just walking into the octagon? You know, you've been on the show before talking about how you've dreamed of being in the UFC. What was that like before the fight even unfolded?
Well, I'll tell you what, they walked us out of the locker room and out to kind of a staging area, while they were at commercial break, and we were standing there right at the edge of the crowd, and you could see the crowd and the octagon and all the cameras, and, it felt, almost a bit surreal. And, I'd been there lots of times in smaller shows, but to actually be in the big show and then to hear that trademark music of the UFC's before every fight, to actually start playing, and then, all the light, the cameras and everyone saying, go now. It was, it was definitely something special, something I had waited a long time to experience. And, although it was my first time, I felt at home. Like I said before, I've been in the cage with UFC veterans and established fighters, and so that side of it was, surprisingly really, really comfortable for me. Once I got in that cage, I felt, I was excited and ready to get on with the fight and ready to, like I said, make a real difference in that middleweight division. Mm-hmm.
Do you prepare for that kind of, I guess my question is, how do you mentally prepare for that? You've wanted this for so long and you've made no qualms about it. How do you mentally prepare for that big event? Or do you? Or did you sort of let the experience happen to you? Or did you think to yourself, I gotta keep it cool, because you really look composed in the ring right from the get-go. Is that something that you've worked on, or is that something that just comes naturally to you?
I think after 20 some odd fights, 25 or 26 fights that I have, it starts to become pretty natural after a while. As I said, I fought, Gideon Ray in a cage in front of 7,000 people at Halifax in the ECC, and I fought, Joe Dirksen in a cage in Winnipeg. So, in front of us, and once again, a sold-out crowd. So, it's, you get used to that feeling of coming through the crowd, and like I said, the UFC was the bigger stage, but I've been there, I've had that feeling before of going to the cage and getting ready to fight. So, I don't know if but of course, mentally, you prepare as well. Leading up to the fight, I had done a lot of, mental preparation about this was my one opportunity. But as you guys said, not only was I given an opportunity to fight in the UFC, but I was going to be fighting on live television in front of millions of people. So I had mentally prepared myself that I was going to go out there and seize the moment and, secure hopefully secure my spot in the UFC for the coming years.
Now, on the pre-fight interviews and even afterwards, you talked to Joe Rogan, and you talked about the fact that you're waiting for Ed Herman to come towards you, and that, you're willing, looking to submit him or knock him out, almost as if you're kind of giving up the wrestling edge, perhaps, or maybe I'm wrong on that, but yet you went for the clinch first, Jason. Was that just because you just saw an opportunity to get the double underhooks and then just went for the clinch?
I was actually going for the right hand. He was moving to my right and he was moving backwards, and I almost had him, kind of cornered as best you can in an octagon. And, I seen an opportunity to let the right hand go. And just as I did, it just was a natural progression. It grazed off his chin, but I went right into the body lock. And, our strategy going in was that he was saying he was going to be aggressive, which he usually is. And we were going to make him come after us, and we were hoping to land a nice punch, and
And but the other side of that was is if he really did force the takedown, that we didn't mind being on the ground. I mean, obviously, I submitted him, but our goal was to be on top on the ground. So at that point, you know, I went into the clinch, but I had the double unders, and I thought, okay, well, I'm here now, then let's just see where we can go with this.
Yeah. Well, when you dropped down to 185, you know, immediately people up here in Canada thought you'd be extremely big and strong at that weight. And Ned Herman's always been noted for his strength. How did you find, I mean, I know it was a relatively short fight, but when you guys were clinched up against the fence, how did you find his strength?
Well, you know, I felt stronger. I felt a lot bigger and stronger than him. But, I mean, that was the whole reason for dropping down to 185 was, yeah. I wanted to be the bigger, stronger guy in that smaller weight division. And, you know, so far, of all the guys I've fought, that's been the case. I felt like I've been physically stronger and therefore able to dominate a little bit more, at least on the physical side of things.
Mm-hmm. Do you think he was a little surprised at that, at the takedown attempt and at the your proficiency in the scramble?
I think an advantage for me going into this fight was that Ed Herman seen me fight Matt Horwich, his teammate. He was in Matt Horwich's corner, you know, almost, I guess it would be maybe even over 2 years ago when we fought. And since that time, I would like to think I'm a completely different fighter. You know, I've gained much more, you know, many more skills since that fight. So, and I'm not sure that he's maybe watched too many other of my fights since then. So, whereas for me, I seen his last fight in the final against Kendall Groves, and that was only in June. So, you know, and once again, he comes from Team Quest, but he's been with Team Quest ever since his fighting career has begun, as far as I've known. So, I didn't expect him to change much as a fighter. If he wasn't going to other places to get different training, if he was still training at the same old place. And in 3 months, I didn't expect, you know, I kind of knew what I was getting with Ed Herman. So, and I think, you know, to my advantage, he didn't realize how much I had changed since the last time he had seen me fight. So, I think he maybe was a bit surprised. I heard some of his interviews where he was saying technically he thought I was a better striker, but he was going to stand there and brawl with me, and he thought he was a little better at the submissions than I was, and he thought he was a better wrestler than I was. So, you know, and I thought, well, he may have a little edge on the Greco-Roman wrestling coming from Team Quest, but I knew his submissions were definitely not better than mine, and I knew his stand-up was a better mine. So, you know, I was prepared to take the fight wherever it was going to lead to.
Now, you mentioned your submission skills and as well after the post-fight interview with Joe Rogan, you talked about Gracie Barra and your training with Josh Russell, who has his own Gracie Barra school out of Calgary, but then you also were training with Fabio Holanda, another jiu-jitsu instructor, black belt, out east, and also training with Patrick Cote. What was the thought process, Jason, about going out east and training with Fabio and Patrick before this fight?
Well, unfortunately, Josh was down in Brazil. He was down in Brazil during the training camp for this fight. The day I found out about the fight, he actually left for Brazil.
Okay.
So he wasn't around to help me prepare for the fight. So knowing that, you know, this fight could go to the ground, and, you know, Ed being a wrestler, I wanted to make sure that my skills were, you know, at the best they could be for the fight. So, you know, Mark Pavlich is my manager, and he's also the manager of Fabio Holanda. And being the owner and promoter of the Maximum Fighting Championship, Patrick Cote is his middleweight champion as well. So we had some lines of communication open there, and I ran the idea by Mark that what does he think about me maybe going down there and preparing with them. Patrick's busy preparing for a fight, and Fabio just came off a fight in the MFC, so... And he thought it was a great idea. I made a couple phone calls, and, you know, it was a done deal within a couple of hours. So, I guess I was seizing the opportunity to get some good training in light of the fact that Josh wasn't around. So I went down there and took some of his techniques and his advice and worked them into my fighting and the base of skills that Josh and I had Mark had already built. And, you know, as far as Patrick, I mean, he was preparing for a fight, and we all know the caliber of fighter he is. So anytime you have someone preparing to fight and in your weight division and with the experience of Patrick Cote, it's, you know, it was a win-win situation for both of us.
Yeah.
Jason, can I ask you a technical question about the fight? Once you have the triangle sunk in, it looked like it was nice and tight, and actually it took a long time for him to tap out, and you actually let him stand back up or get back up to his feet while he was in the triangle. Recently you've seen a lot of fighters adapting that ankle hook, you know, when the guy's trying to stand back up.
Yeah.
You hook his ankle so he can't actually stand back up and slam you or anything like that.
Yeah.
Is there any reason why you didn't do that?
The truth is I was just caught up in the moment. I got caught up going for the choke, and I don't know if you rewatch the fight, you'll hear Josh in the corner screaming, "Hook the leg, hook the leg." And eventually I did hook the leg and drag him back down to the ground.
Yeah.
And that was all, you know, I got caught up in the moment. I got that triangle locked on there tight, and I started, you know, getting fixated on just finishing that triangle. And then Josh started screaming, "Throw the elbows, loosen them up with the elbows," and then you can hear it on tape, and then you'll see right away I start throwing the elbows. And then, of course, he starts to pull out, or trying to pull out anyways. It was on pretty tight. I'm not sure that he even could have pulled out anyways. But, and then Josh starts screaming, hook the leg, and you see me reach over and hook the leg. And shortly thereafter, I finish him with the triangle.
Yeah, you mentioned afterwards that, you know, he showed a lot of resiliency and toughness, trying to wait out that triangle, trying to get out. At the time, what was going through your head? Did you start to panic, you know, wondering if you were going to be able to tap him, or did you just know it was a matter of time?
No, I knew it was a matter of time. I mean, I had that cinched in there pretty good, and I knew it was pretty early in the round. And, I mean, that's the importance of having a really good corner man, is that person is in your corner to point out those things that you're missing. And, you know, fortunately for me, I've always been pretty calm and collective in there, and I'm able to listen to everything my corner's saying to me. I don't get the tunnel vision and just, you know, focus on one thing. So I'm able to hear what they're saying, and that's their job. They're there to give me direction. They're there to see things that I'm not seeing as the fight's developing. So, I mean, I attribute, you know, a big part of it to my corner. You give me the instructions that I needed to finish off that triangle.
Yeah. Brendan, do you have anything else for Jason?
No, all I have is congratulations for you, and I guess is it nice to hear now, because you were kind of one of these guys, I think, to American fans, who was the, you know, Ed Herman versus some guy we've never heard of, and you can even hear in the announcements Rogan being very, very surprised as the fight progressed and expressing that surprise. Do you take a certain amount of satisfaction in that?
Absolutely. I mean, I always knew what I was capable of, and you know, that's why I've been preaching for the past year. So now that I felt like I was overlooked for way too long, and a UFC caliber fighter, and I've had some big fights, but there's really a small number of people seeing those fights, and only mostly the hardcore fans that follow the forums and the website. So to actually have a breakout fight like that and, you know, really go out there. There was no, you know, a fight's a fight, but there was never any doubt in my mind going into that fight that I was going to beat Ed Herman. And, you know, I went out there and executed, and now it is pretty gratifying to have the world know, and, you know, everybody that was watching the fights that night, and they say it was upwards of 4 million people to, you know, finally know what I'm capable of. Know, capable of doing what I knew I was capable of, you know, years ago.
Jason, before we let you go, you mentioned earlier that they re-signed a 3-fight contract with the UFC. If you had any preference on a couple of opponents that you'd like to face in the octagon in the next few months, who would it be?
You know, I'm not sure. You know, whoever, you know, I want to fight the guys that are going to propel me into title contention. You know, I'm not gonna sit here and call out Rich Franklin, you know, for my next fight or anything like that. But I want to be fighting, you know, I don't want to be those the undercard fights against the lesser known guys. I want to be thrown right into the mix of things. So, you know, there's some, you know, top dogs out there. You get the Mike Swicks and Chris Liebens and Nate Marquardt. Those are the fights I'm looking for. I'm not looking for you know, fights that are just fulfilling the obligations of my contract.
Mm-hmm. Did you get to stare down Marquardt in the staging area?
No, you know, actually, Marquardt was on the same flight for me from Denver into Florida, and we actually were chatting a little bit, and I had chatted with him a few times through the week. So, you know, if that's a fight they want to happen, then so be it. You know, at the end of the day, it's all business when you get in the octagon.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where they go from here. I mean, I guess the one marketing spin that immediately stands out is throwing you up against another former tough guy, Ultimate Fighter guy, like a Mike Swick or a Chris Lieben.
Yeah. So, well, and you know, you got Chris Lieben, who's another Team Quest guy. I'm sure that could add a little more drama to the whole, you know, situation. But like I say, whoever they want me to fight, if they want to bring me along slow, hey, they're the ones signing my paychecks, so be it. But you know, I wanna get into the mix of things as soon as possible. So hopefully, you know, here in the next couple of weeks we'll have something teed up.
Well, Jason, we appreciate you taking some time out. I know you've been away from the family and you've probably been busy all day talking to, you know, numerous people calling and wishing you well. So we appreciate you taking the time out and we'll talk to you soon.
Hey, thanks a lot, guys.
Some things are worth fighting for. 14 American mixed martial artists will battle in the jungles of Costa Rica. 7 will earn the right to fight the Russian Red Devil Team in front of the world, live on pay-per-view. Only they know what this fight means to them, and they'll get their chance to prove it on Bodog Fight. The fight begins September 19th. Check local listings or visit BodogFight.com for more details.
You don't have to be a champion to dress like one. With the Full Contact Fighter Shop, we have all the MMA gear that you see so many of your favorite professional fighters wearing. NHB Extreme Fight shorts, camouflage board shorts, corduroy and camo hats, hooded sweatshirts, to the classic FCF t-shirts, Full Contact Fighter clothing is the number one mixed martial arts brand that any MMA fan must have. Now open is the FCF sticker and banner shop. We have all your favorite IFL team clothing, plus a great assortment of low-priced Pride and MMA DVDs are now all available at the FCF shop. To check it out, head to www.fcfighter.com, pick up the latest edition of the FCF paper, or call 516-676-0033. That number, again, 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred new source of the world. The Big Frog, Jeff Curran, joins the program now, Full Contact Fighter Radio. And Jeff, how are you doing today?
Doing pretty good.
Now, Jeff's going to be fighting this Saturday, October 14th, against Wagner Fabiano at the upcoming Apex show in Gatineau, Quebec. And Jeff, my first question for you is, this fight's really been billed as kind of a grudge match. I know that there's some prior animosity between you two, or I know people have talked about this. Is this kind of like, you know, hyping up the fight a bit, or is there some true animosity between both of you?
Well, there's no animosity. This trails back a few years ago already, where, you know, other promoters were trying to get the fight, and it never really happened. And, you know, at the time, the promoters were just, you know, they would blame it on his end or whatever. Obviously, they didn't want to take the blame for it. But, you know, at this point, there's no bad blood or anything like that. It's just, it's built so long. I want to get the fight over with, you know what I'm saying? I have nothing against him at all, personally. He's a jiu-jitsu guy. He's a fighter. And, you know, I don't really have anything against him in that sense. Now, last time I was out at Apex, when he fought one of my guys, he was running like an hour and a half late for weigh-ins, and the athletic commission was getting ready to cancel the fight. And this was the pro debut of my fighter, Matt Fiordarosa, and Matt was starting to get all worked up and, you know, pissed off that his first fight's going to fall through. And, you know, he just made a big commitment to the sport and quit his wrestling team, and he's like, is this the way it's going to be? You know, I'm going to schedule for a big fight, and there's a chance it might not happen. So I was getting kind of pissed on his end, like, why are you guys an hour and a half late for weigh-in? But that's over and done with. You know, whatever reason he was late, maybe he had a hard time cutting weight, maybe he just found a different clock than everybody else that day, whatever. I don't have anything personal against him. I definitely look forward to, you know, stepping in and fighting him, just because I know he's proved himself and he's got a lot of skill, and he did beat one of my good fighters, and you know, I want to be able to go in there and try and represent the team a little bit. So, you know, that's about as bad as it gets. But there was a time where I was letting it all get to me more probably than he did, you know, because I was being told this or that, and, oh, it's Wagner doesn't want to fight, or Wagner's having a hard time with money, taking the fight based on this money or this deal or that deal. And I'm finally just like, let's get the fight over with. It's starting to drag on. So yeah. Now that it's set, I got nothing against him. I'm glad he finally stepped up, and I finally get a chance to go in there and fight him. It's going to be a good fight. So
I want to ask you a little bit more about Matt Fiorosa, who fought Wagner before, but we'll get into that in just a few minutes here. But, you know, first off, Wagner Fabiano, accomplished Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu instructor out of Ontario. You yourself, accomplished instructor, both black belts. Have you seen the tape of Wagner's last couple fights? Where do you think that you might have the advantage over him?
I don't think he's got punching power. I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, my last fight, I just lost the decision. I thought I had advantages over the striking as well, and it turned against me. So, I think my advantage, I guess, would be that the only advantage I'd say that I have would be maybe I have a little bit more punching power or punching ability. I've definitely been, you know, training with southpaw, against southpaws, and working on, you know, filling gaps that I had in my game. You know, he might be the better takedown guy. He might be more decorated than me on the ground, but I've never had a hard time with top caliber Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu fighters in the ring, or on the mat for that matter. So he doesn't really have an edge on me. I don't think, oh, he's going to come in and dominate me on the ground. He's a Jiu-Jitsu black belt. I'm a Jiu-Jitsu black belt. I'm totally confident in that. So bring it on, you know. I don't want to jinx myself. I'm not overly confident. I'm actually respecting Wagner more than a lot of my opponents I've had as of recent, just because, you know, he is skilled, he is talented, and you know, he is dangerous to me. I don't want to take anything for granted, you know.
Yeah, definitely. Wagner doesn't have the amount of experience that you do. I mean, he's only had four fights, but he does have wins over fairly recognizable names: Balquak, Matt Fiorosa, your student, who's gone on to have a very successful beginning to his career. But when you look at yourself, how much do you think that the experience factor comes into play? You know, you're someone who's fought world-class fighters. We'll get into the Pride fight in a minute, but over 30 fights, do you feel that you've got an advantage in him over him in that sense?
You know, when one thing is for sure, no matter how hard you train, nothing prepares you to go a hard 3 rounds or a hard 5 rounds or whatever. Nothing prepares you for that more than just going out and actually experiencing a rough 3 rounds, or, you know, time and time again. And half of my fights have gone the distance, and I think he's only gone the distance once. So, you know, I don't know. Maybe he's gone twice. I'm not too sure of his record at the moment, but he definitely doesn't know what it's like to be in the third round on the receiving end. He might know what it's like to be in the third round being ahead 2 rounds. He might not, you know, he might not know what it's like to be in the third round tired, because I push the pace, or tired because, or dizzy because I've landed some hard shots or whatever, or frustrated because I'm shutting his submission attempts down. He's going to get to the third round if it goes that far and realize that it's not what he expected. And I know what it's like in the third round. And third round is usually my better round. And so I don't look forward to it because you're always a little more tired and fatigued or whatever, but I know what I do, how I perform in the third round, and I know that that's the only thing you can really experience that with this experience, being in the third round. So that might play a factor, you know.
Yeah, well, he's gone a decision twice, his first fight in 2000, and then, of course, against Matt, so...
Right.
But, you know, you mentioned the Hatsuhiyoki fight, and Jeff, you had won 9 fights in a row, hadn't lost since you lost to Matt Serra, and I think it was 2004, and then you fought Hatsu at the Pride Bushido in the end of August, and lost by decision. I didn't get a chance to see that fight, but did you, went to decision, did you know that you were behind, or did you think you might get a decision?
No, I knew I was going to lose the decision, and you know, if I was a judge, I wouldn't have given it to me either. I would say the first 8 minutes of the fight, you know, he was pushing the pace. He was so tall compared to me. I mean, when you see me standing by him, I was thinking, okay, the height and the reach isn't going to make a difference because he's not going to want to stand with me once I hit him. And I didn't think he was that good of a kicker. I kind of underestimated him. And then in the clinch, like, his leverage was so much better than mine, and he kept taking me down, and he wouldn't do anything once he was there. He'd get back to his feet and stuff. But finally, you know, about after taking like 8 minutes worth of leg kicks, I don't know, I wasn't dealing with it. He kicked my leg, and the first few didn't hurt, so I let him. And then after that, he kind of had me pegged, and I started getting frustrated, and my legs started getting really sore, and I wasn't really checking kicks or answering kicks back. I was just kind of taking it, and I just kind of shut down. I don't know why I didn't react. And until the last, like, minute and a half of the first 10-minute round, I finally got on top, and I was in his guard, and, you know, he was making submission attempts, but I was stomping in the face and kicking him in the face and landing some hard punches, and I could see at that point, like, all right, cool, everything's turned in my favor, but it wasn't enough to win the fight to this point. And then he came out refreshed for the last 5 minutes and went to town on my elite leg again, and, you know, probably just listened to his coaches and said, you know, go after that leg. He's not stopping it. And that was the case. And, you know, I had to start kind of head hunting because I had no other chance but to maybe knock him out or something like that. So I started going after him with one and two punch combinations and landing some hard shots, but then letting him regroup. So it's just kind of one of those fights, you know, it ends and you look at the tape time and time again, and, you know, it just bothers me and makes sure that kind of situation never happens again. You know, I was out pointed. That's how I look at it. Like you would be if you were in a boxing match, an amateur boxing match, and they throw more punches than you and push you backwards, it looks like they win, and that's how I felt. During the fight, I never felt completely dominated or anything like that. I just felt like I didn't match well with them, and it frustrated me, and I knew I was losing the fight, and that didn't help either, you know.
Now, we had Mark Hominick on the program last week, and he was talking about that it appears now that his rematch with Hatsuhiyoki will not be until February. But having fought Hatsu now and having coached and worked with Mark Hominick a lot, what can you take from that fight, Jeff, as a coach, and pass on to Mark as far as his strategy for his rematch with Hatsu?
The one thing I would say to Mark is definitely kick him, because Mark kicks like a truck. Mm-hmm. So he definitely needs to kick Hiyoki. He has to kick his lead leg, and he needs to throw his switch kick, because it's a really strong kick. He's got to go, you know, he's got to keep his hands, the feet to hand combinations flying, and not worry about him shooting in so much, because Mark's got a decent takedown defense, and he's got a decent enough guard that he can, you know, tie him up and control the fight. But the difference between Mark and Hiyoki and me and Hiyoki is the way that Hiyoki's going to fight Mark. He knows his advantages on the ground. So he's going to, and he doesn't want to stand with Mark. And in his eyes, Mark's got more reach than me. Mark's a world-class striker in his eyes compared to me. I don't have any real legitimate striking background that he can track. So he was confident standing with me. With Mark, he doesn't want to stand with Mark. And if he does, I think he's in trouble. as long as Mark answers kicks back and throws, you know, lets his stuff fly. But he's going to try to, I think he'll try to take Mark down again. He's going to take him down. He's going to try to be patient and take his time and go to work on Mark on the ground. With me, I don't think he really wanted to be there. Even when he took me down, he'd throw a punch or two and he'd stand up and get away. He never wanted to be on the ground with me. But I think he's just going to fight him different than he fought me.
My last question for you is getting back to Matt Fiordoroso, one of your top students. I was lucky enough to see that fight against Wagner and Matt's pro debut showing up here nationwide on the Sports Network. Great fight. Matt showed a lot of heart, especially when one considers it was his professional debut. He's got a pro-am combined record of 9-1. Tell us a little bit about, to the audience, for people who aren't familiar with Matt at this point, what are your expectations for him, and how has his career been going? Obviously quite successful, but maybe you can give us a little bit more insight into Matt Fiordoroso.
Matt's world-class all the way around. I mean, he doesn't slack. He trains every day. He hasn't lost a pro fight since he fought Wagner. And at the point when he went and fought him, now looking back, I mean, his first four amateur fights that he won, they all ended in like a minute and a half, and he was completely dominant over them. He didn't fight anybody. They were, you know, get used to fighting fights. They weren't anything special. And then the opportunity came to fight Wagner, and we all agreed that it'd be a great move to see if Matt can beat him. Then there's never no reason for me to fight him, and if Matt can beat him, then Matt's on his way. You know, Matt's got a jump start off the line. He thought his advantage had been standing up with Wagner, and he definitely thought he could out-wrestle Wagner. But what happens when you start lunging in with punches is the takedown becomes easier. So he never really went out and wrestled Wagner, I think, with his best ability. And then once he got pegged with that and taken down in the first round, he took some serious hard shots from behind when Wagner had his back, and you know, that kind of, he never felt that before. So now that fight's over with, he's training really hard. He's stepping up and fighting better name guys. He's having some real good wars. He's gone distance a few times now and got a chance to really experience what a rough fight is like, and I think a lot of that is owed to the fight with Wagner, because he's experienced one of the worst things you can experience, getting dominated for three rounds in his very first pro fight. He didn't want that to ever happen again, so bright future for him, for sure.
Well, Jeff, we appreciate you taking some time out from your busy schedule. Jeff Kern will be fighting Wagner Fabiano again one more time here in Gatineau, Quebec, on the main event of the Apex Fighting Championship. It's a great main event. And Jeff, and thanks again for coming on the show once more.
Thank you.
Hey guys, Kelsey Mode here from Full Contact Fighter Radio. Listen, if you have any comments, questions, or just want to flat out tell me off, contact me at radio@fcfighter.com. That address, again, is radio@fcfighter.com.
Any correspondence that is sent to Mr. Moe must be presented in business letter format in an aerial script with a font point no larger than 12 and no smaller than 8. All letters must be written in UK English and must be received by Mr. Moe before no later than 12 hours prior to the posting of this program. Any fiscal donations must be in Canadian currency, and please pay no attention to this previous statement.
Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio. And Brendan, some interesting comments from Jason the Athlete McDonald, and I think a lot of people, north of the border have been looking forward to Jason's debut in the UFC for quite some time. You know, he's kind of a well-known commodity in Canada. And, I think there's probably some interest in Jason McDonald now down south in the States, because he took out Ed Herman, who's, because of the Ultimate Fighter program, was one of the more highly regarded or highly, you know, noted middleweight fighters.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, yeah, he was arguably, could have been the champion of Tough 3. And some people think that he should have gotten that decision, but no, I think McDonald, you know, every small show you go to, some guy who's like 3-1 wins a fight, and they're like, go more in UFC! Look out for me in the UFC, you know? but it's nice to see this, someone who's earnestly fought, and Jason, you know, he's not the type of guy who says, you know, I'm kind of looking out for the best offer and shopping around. His eyes have been like laser beams focused on the UFC.
Yeah.
Right? And that's been his goal. So it's nice to see achieve their goals through hard work and you know, not basically relying on their own natural skills and the things that they that have gotten him there. But in the last 2 years, he's really changed up his game and worked hard and developed to be a nicely rounded fighter.
Well, I just think that he moved down from 205 pounds to the middleweight division. He had a couple tough losses at 205 against some guys who've been in the UFC, like Marvin Eastman was an example of a fighter who was able to take him down and dictate the fight from that standpoint. And then he drops down to 185, and he had some problems with Shoney Carter in his debut there, but then he goes on and beats Joe Dirksen in what was apparently a great fight from all accounts. He fought Patrick Cote, which was an amazing five-round fight, but lost that. And has pulled off quite a few wins now in a row. Gideon Ray, another UFC veteran, he's got a win over. So it seems like Jason's really becoming comfortable at 185, and like we alluded to in the interview, he looked, you know, Ed Herman's a pretty big guy, I'd say, at 185, and Jason McDonald did look very strong, very big at that weight.
Yeah, he looked very competent in that scramble, and you'd think that would have been... I was actually kind of anxious when it first went down like that, because I thought Herman was going to just basically dominate him positioning-wise on the ground, and he had a couple really nice reversals, and that was actually really nice. That was actually that whole first minute scramble was really nice to watch. It was very exciting.
So you've retaken the lead, buddy. Have to tip my hat to you. Retaking the lead, I believe you're up 5-4 now as far as the pick war goes. Now, quite famous pick war between Brendan Lear and Tussimon. And I think that was the only fight that we were split on. I had said that I thought Ed Herman was going to get a decision kind type of victory, that I didn't see him stopping Jason, but thought that he'd probably dictate it through wrestling. And Jason clearly proved me wrong, especially on the reversal side of it, able to keep at it from out top. So I think that was the only fight where we were split. We both picked Johnny Alessio to beat Thiago Alves, and we were wrong on that.
Yeah, I would like to see that fight.
Actually, hold on. I think did we split on Rory Singer versus Josh Haynes?
Well, I actually picked Haynes.
Yeah, and I picked Singer, so actually yeah. We're tied. You know, we don't have a lot of time, and we still got to make the picks for the UFC on Saturday night.
Do you think anyone really cares about our picks?
No, probably not.
All right. Did you happen to see? By the way, before we move on to the UFC, did you happen to see the K1 show?
No, I didn't. And
actually, the only fight I didn't see is Carlos Newton's fight, which apparently he fought and won in his return to MMA.
Right, and he'll be fighting Enzo Gracie, the IFL just announced, soon as well. So he looks like he's jumped back into competition. How are things? You mentioned watch K1, and obviously Jay-Z Cavalcanti beating Cal Uno. Cal Uno took out Ivan Manjovar to make it to the final, well, decision victory. How did that fight look, the Cal Uno-Ivan Manjovar fight?
It was actually surprising, you know, because for a couple guys who had to fight a second fight, they both stood up. Neither of them wanted to take the fight to the ground. I think it only went down maybe once. And I actually thought Menjivar got the better of the exchanges, but there were two. Basically, I think Uno got the decision because there were two what were remarkable moments. The first was he got kicked. Menjivar got a clean shot at his ribs, and Menjivar actually paused and, you know, grimaced one of those agonizing grimaces of pain and dropped his hands and looked like he was going to pack it in. But that was at the very first part of the fight. And then in just a very sloppy scramble, Uno took his back. Menjivar was never in trouble, but Uno took his back for about 30 seconds at the very, very end of the fight. And I think that basically tipped the scales for Uno. So it was a very unimpressive win, unimpressive fight. Menjivar displayed no... He displayed, I guess, no real aggression or, you know, he'd think he would have learned the lesson fighting in Japanese shows that you need to win convincingly to get the decision. So, you know, I don't think he pulled it out in that respect.
And what about, what for you is the most notable action on the light heavyweight side of things?
Well, I think,
middleweight side of things, but.
Right, Manhoff looked great. He breezed through his first fight, against Oyama, and almost a non-starter. You know, I think the fight went a minute or a little bit more than that. And in the finals, he was doing again, was flurrying like crazy, and Akiyama did all he could just to basically survive the flurry. And it looked, when they clinched up, it looked like Manhoff actually tried to take him down, and in a sloppy exchange on the ground, just lost position. So I think Manhoff is one of these characters that's, you know, just on the cusp of becoming one of these very competent strikers who can. He's got a really decent sprawl now, and he just needs to fine-tune his wrestling a little bit more, and he's going to be, I think he's literally going to be unstoppable, because his Muay Thai is just devastating, absolutely devastating.
And do you think Akiyama has the capabilities to be one of the better fighters in the world at that weight?
I don't think that. His stand-up is decent, you know, and he had some pretty phenomenal leg kicks in his first fight, in his win. Kazanov, the guy who almost killed Sakuraba,
Smirnova,
and he landed some devastating leg kicks in that, and actually turned the course of the fight with those leg kicks.
Wasn't it Castuda Smirnova?
Yes, I'm sorry. Yeah. Yeah, I'm sorry. And yeah, that fight looked great, and he actually won that fight. I think it was a left hook. Or right hook, but yeah, his stand-up looked okay, but again, I don't think he looked really bad against Manhoff. He was just simply incapable of defending on his feet, it was interesting, he didn't wear a gi for the first fight, and he wore a gi for the second fight, so that also might have turned the table, so maybe if he wouldn't have been able to wear that gi, maybe the Manhoff fight would have gone differently. That wouldn't surprise me.
Moving on to UFC 64, a couple fights I want to get your opinions on from the undercard. The first one, Tamina, really strikes me as it's going to be an interesting fight, and it's going to be tough for me to make a call because I haven't seen Yushin Nakami fight, but I hear great things about him. He's taking on Caleb Starnes, and I know, Brendan, you've seen Okami fight. Who are you picking in this? I got to say, I'm not going to make a pick because I haven't seen Okami fight.
I think, this is going to be a really tough fight. And I think they're not doing Starnes any favors by bringing in and having him fight Okami. So he's not getting the kid gloves, and he's not getting the velvet carpet into the UFC. That being said, I think this will be one of the most entertaining fights. We may not be able to see it, depending on what happens with the big fights. But I look forward to this, to seeing this at some point, hopefully. And I think it's going to be a fantastic fight. I think Okami's great, good, competent on his feet, great on the ground, and a lot of people saw him
Rumble on the Rock
winning his fight in Rumble on the Rock. And I actually tend to agree with that. I think he should have got the decision against Shields.
Well, and that's one thing I've mentioned on the show before, and it sounds almost like I'm plugging the service, but I can't help it. I think it's a great thing that the UFC is doing, is the on-demand option. You know, ideally, you'd like to see more fights shown on the pay-per-view. I mean, that's what we spend the money on, and then to go and have to fork over more money. But, of course, there's certain time obligations. But for sure, that is one fight I will be looking to download if we're not fortunate enough to see it on the pay-per-view, will be Caleb Starnes versus Yushin Okami.
Yeah, to be quite honest, I'm not impressed with this whole pay-per-view time block stuff. You know, whose rule is it that they only have 3 hours to show a pay-per-view? It angers me that they want more money to see these undercard fights, first of all.
But the
thing is, on my pay-per-view, there's like 150 channels, and half of them are showing, like, bad porn, and the other half are showing crappy, you know, Hollywood movies. Are you trying to tell me that time is so precious on, you know, that one, the one or one to ten of 10,000 hours available at any one time is so precious that they can't show a 5-hour pay-per-view or a 4-hour pay-per-view?
Yeah, I I'm not going to talk out of my ass because maybe you are, but I don't know exactly how that works. It would be a good question to maybe find out from the people of your choice who are ultimately behind that as far as, well, I guess the UFC would be beyond it. I don't know how that works, how the payments work for time, how much time's allotted for certain, you know, how much it costs. I'm really not sure. I know that in the past and this is way back in the day, the old school prides, it was interesting. You could go rent, here in Vancouver, a Japanese video store would rent the pride videos, VHS, and this is, you know, clearly you wouldn't get them for about 2 months after the event itself, but they would have the entire event, the whole pride, And sometimes he'd even have to rent two tapes, and it'd be in Japanese, mm-hmm. obviously. But I always thought that was great. And, you know, but the English pay-per-view would kind of be in the same sort, similar format to UFC. They wouldn't necessarily show all the fights, etc. So I don't know how it works.
Are those fond recollections, you know, going to the Japanese grocery store?
Fond memories. The next fight I want to talk about is Keith Jardine versus Mike Nichols. And I look at this fight, and, you know, I know Mike Nichols has got decent ground, good ground. He's reputed to have a strong grappling game. And from watching him in the Ultimate Fighter, he did look, appear to have that. But I just think going up against a guy like Keith Jardine, coming from the Jackson camp, from what I've seen of Keith and his stand-up capabilities, and he's pretty competent on the ground as well, I'm looking at this fight and thinking that Nichols will have a tough time getting Jardine to the ground, and if he does, I can't see him submitting him. I'm going to go with Jardine.
I think Jardine is going to dispatch Nichols quickly and ferociously. I think Jardine in his last couple fights has really been dialing it in, and I think he's really starting to click as a fighter, and I see him, of all the prospects of that year, as being potentially the best of the bunch.
Really?
And definitely a contender.
Was he the same year as Rashad Evans? I don't even remember now.
Hmm?
Was he the same year as Rashad Evans?
Well, Jardine came down from heavyweight. Did he?
Right.
Did he? Yeah. So yeah, he sort of Rashad. So yeah.
They were the same year? I don't know. It all mashes into one now.
It's all mushing together. They must have been, because Jardine came down and so did Evans. So.
Kinoyosha Hironaka, who was supposed to fight BJ Penn until George St. Pierre had his groin injury and couldn't fight Matt Hughes, and BJ Penn took his place, of course. He's fighting John Fitch. And, you know, on this fight, I've heard a lot about Hironaka, and John Fitch, I think we've had him on the program, and I think he's one of the lesser discussed welterweights in the UFC as far as the upper echelon, and he definitely deserves his due in that respect. And again, you know, I'm kind of sounding like a chump here, but Hironaka, I haven't really seen him fight either. So have you seen any of his fights from
overseas? Yeah, I saw his fight against Verissimo, and I've seen him fight Nick Diaz, actually, I think, if I remember.
Yeah, I think he did fight Nick, yeah.
Yeah, so his Verissimo fight looked great, and I think, actually, this is going to be another one of these dark horse fights. It could be. What did John Fitch say? This is going to be the swing bout.
I don't remember if he mentioned it was going to be the swing, but he definitely mentioned it was going to be televised, and he was looking forward to the fact that.
Well, so this is the one that'll be on the verse. Well, I think it'll be great. I think this is another potentially fantastic fight. There should be a couple. There should be a couple like this.
The first championship fight of the night that I want to talk about is Sean Sherk versus Kenny Florin for the UFC lightweight championship. And I'm pretty excited about this fight. I think this one is going to be closer than I think perhaps a lot of people are thinking it's going to be. I haven't seen the line on Sean Sherk, but it seems like most people are heavily favoring Sean. And, you know, I think for almost that reason, there's part of me that wants to go with Florian, just because it seems like Florian, in so many of these situations where he has not been the favorite, he's performed so well, and he's got such a great submission game that, you know, this fight for me is definitely really hard to call. But in saying that, I think that Sean Sherk is going to be able to take Kenny down and dictate the fight from there, and I think I'm going to go with Sean Sherk winning, you know, by a cut or a decision kind of victory.
It's tough not to go with Sherk. I don't think he's ever been submitted. I don't think he's ever been knocked out. And I can't see Florian.
Well, I think George St. Pierre, did he submit him?
No, I think it was a TKO. Yeah, so I don't see Florian as having the tools. I know he's got some decent Muay Thai, so you always have that chance, but I actually don't see the stars being aligned for Florian in this one. And I actually don't see this as being much of a fight.
Yeah, you're right. George St. Pierre won by technical knockout. For a second there, I thought maybe he had dazed him and got the rear naked choke. But
Yeah, I got to pick Sherk, and I actually don't think. No disrespect to Florian, but I don't think it's going to be much of a fight. I think this is a terrible matchup for Florian.
Yeah, see, I think it's going to be closer than a lot of people think. But I know what you're saying, you look at Sean Sherk and his potential for his takedown capabilities at 155. being such a strong, huge guy at that, in that weight division, you'd have to think that he'll be able to, that will only improve that aspect of his game tremendously. And, yeah. Next up, of course, is the main event, and I think this fight is finally starting to get a little bit of hype, but you know me, I've had a few different rants about this, and I still gotta say, man, you know, I know some people are starting to talk about it, but I still maintain that it's not getting the hype that it deserves, and I think that is because they threw Anderson Silva in there too quick, and we've had a couple fighters on the show who've agreed with that idea, and you know, it's too bad, but that's kind of neither here nor there. It's still going to be a great fight. I think I'm going to have to go with Rich Franklin on this. I think Rich Franklin's got the capabilities that if he does try standing with Anderson and gets in some trouble, I think that he'll have enough time to get it to the ground, although I did say that about Chris Leben, didn't I? And I think Rich Franklin's overall game, even though I'm talking about a guy in Anderson Silva's got his black belt in jiu-jitsu, I think Rich's overall game as being such a conditioned, strong 185-pounder, his wrestling capabilities, submission capabilities, stand-up, I'm going to go with Rich Franklin.
I just changed my mind. I was kind of weighing in on Rich Franklin, but I think there's enough doubt in my mind about Franklin's state of mind coming into this fight, that I think I'm going to go with Silva, if only to make a different pick than you. I think we saw the sort of result of, I think people underestimate, because the Franklin-Luazo fight seemed to be so dominant in Franklin's, in Franklin's favor, I think people may underestimate the amount of damage that Franklin actually took in that fight. And he's been recuperating ever since, and this is his first fight back. And Silva is one of those guys, you know, if you're fighting someone who's a great wrestler, decent in jiu-jitsu, you know, you could hang in for a round and fight off your back and sort of fight them off. But if you've got Russ coming in and have the least amount of apprehension, especially when you have your title on the line, Silva, it don't take a second of mental lapse for Silva to take advantage. And I think he's just the type of fighter who can do that. And I think Franklin has demonstrated that his chin is susceptible. He recovers very well, but he can certainly be knocked down. I think that might be the unknown for me, as what kind of state mentally and physically Franklin's going to be in, whether he's can shake off the rust.
Yeah. All right, well, that's the first clear-cut separation. We'll see what happens. I think that's the only pick where we're differing then, is on the main event.
I think Silva, and I think this is unfortunate too, and going back to what you said before about why is he fighting in a championship fight when they didn't get a chance to build him up, but who knows, you know, you never know what's going on behind the scenes, and it could be that, you know, they made two or three phone calls before him, and people, you know, oftentimes this doesn't get out. People say, no, I don't want to fight Franklin.
Build me up
a little bit more. And the management's becoming more and more savvy, where fighters just aren't taking, hey, do you want to fight for the championship fight? They just won't jump on stuff like that, you know?
True enough, but you could also argue, if that was the case, that they probably could have pushed Rich back a little bit, and they could have had Anderson Silva fight, at least one more time before this fight. I mean, he was fine after Chris Leben. I'm sure he wants to make money, he wants to have a title shot, so I think you could easily say to him, well, look, you know, Anderson, we're going to throw you up against another Ultimate Fight Night guy, one of the other middleweights, and if you win that, then we'll set you up with Rich Franklin in October. They could have done that, man.
Yeah, I think they could have, but who knows? They didn't, though, did they?
No, and it's funny, when you watch the preview, they've got all these highlights of Rich Franklin, and then there's just the same footage of him Anderson knocking out Chris Leben, which you're like, ah. All right, Brendan, I'm going to take off.
We'll see you later, Kelf. I'll just finish off the show.
All right, buddy.